This is a download from the BBC. For more information and our terms of use, go to bbc.co.uk/radio3.
King Ethelred the Unready is one of the archetypal weak kings of English history. His epithet, the Unready, encapsulates all that can be easily remembered about him. He was king of the English at a time of renewed Viking invasions in the late 10th century. But whereas his great-great-grandfather, King Alfred the Great, 100 years earlier, had fought off the Vikings and saved his people, Ethelred the Unready was never ready when the Danes were, and was reduced to paying them large sums of money in order to induce them to go away. Though, of course, they just came back for more. In the end, Ethelred succumbed completely to the Danes. In 1013, he was driven out of his kingdom by Sven Forkbeard, and was forced to take refuge in Normandy. He soon came back, after Sven's death in 1014, but he succumbed again to Sven's son, Knut the Mighty, leading to 25 years of Danish rule. In the person of King Ethelred the Unready, the House of Wessex had gone soft. Ethelred the Unready lies buried in London, in the Cathedral Church of St. Paul. Alas, his marble tomb was lost when Old St. Paul's was destroyed in the Great Fire of London in 1666. Ethelred is not, therefore, to be found in the crypt, alongside Nelson and Wellington, though his name can be seen nearby in the coffee shop, on a modern stone which stands for all the tombs known to have been lost in the fire. I should like to think, however, that Ethelred is not out of place in St. Paul's. He was the first king of the English to be buried there, and he was the first of his line who could have looked his people in the face and said, "I am a Londoner." Ethelred's name is a combination of the Old English word Athel, meaning noble, excellent, and Rad, meaning advice, counsel. Many Anglo-Saxon names were formed like this and make little sense as compounds. But people were certainly aware of the meaning of the separate elements, and the name Noble Council would have created certain expectations. The second element, Rad, is commonly found in the literature of the period in the form Unrad, used in general contexts of an act of treachery or of an ill-considered course of action, and used also in contexts which refer specifically to events of the time. Someone might have noticed the irony, and it was perhaps in this way that Ethelred came to be known, sooner or later, as Athelrad Unrad, as if to contrast the expectation and the reality. In time, the point of the witticism was lost, and the epithet took on a life of its own, giving rise to the notion that Ethelred himself was inept, incompetent, and fundamentally unready for everything that befell him. Modern historians enjoy nothing more than debunking the myths and prejudices of previous generations, knocking a hero off his pedestal, or claiming that a much maligned king deserves rehabilitation. In Ethelred's case, there is no arguing about the disastrous outcome of his reign, under the intense pressure of Viking attack. It can be said in his case, however, that there was more to his reign than meets the eye in the familiar narrative sources, such as the Anglo-Saxon Chronicle, and much more to its outcome than any personal failings on the part of the king himself. Ethelred had come to the throne in 978, following the murder of his half-brother, Edward the Martyr. It is not known who was responsible, but the crime cast a long shadow over Ethelred's reign, and the Viking invasions soon came to be seen as a sign of God's anger with the English people, for their collective complicity in the death of an anointed king. In the 980s, Ethelred fell under the influence of men who were able to take advantage of his youth in the advancement of their own interests. Religious houses which had flourished so much in his father's reign, like Abingdon and the Oldminster Winchester, lost some of their lands, and their privileges were violated. We read in the Anglo-Saxon Chronicle for 986, "In this year the king laid waste the diocese of Rochester." And since we don't know the cause of the dispute between the king and the archbishop, it looks like an arbitrary act of violence. The king was in his late teens, moving into his early 20s, and it was not a good beginning. for a period of 15 years, from 990 to 1005, a Viking force was at large in England, first as a hostile army in the early 990s, then as a mercenary force based on the Isle of Wight, hired to protect the country against others of their own kind, and latterly as a hostile army again. During these years, the king and his councillors strove to come to terms with their predicament and to earn God's support in their struggle against the heathen foe. And it was in this context, with Ethelred now in his mid to late 20s, that the king saw the errors of his ways and resolved to make amends. The business of the kingdom was conducted at assemblies convened by the king 4 or 5 times each year, attended by the great and the good drawn from all parts of the country. Of course, these were opportunities for feasting, intrigue and networking, but they were also occasions for serious work. The royal assemblies were held at places like London and Winchester and Woodstock and Wantage. Among their products were the king's law codes and his charters recording grants of land. And it is principally from these sources that we begin to understand what was going on underneath the surface. In the late 990s, for example, the king and his councillors met at Wantage, determined to sort out matters of current concern. There they issued a code of laws, setting out some measures for the improvement of public security. One clause contains the statement of an important principle: "And a judgment in which the 12 thanes are unanimous is to be valid. If they disagree, what 8 of them say is to be valid. And those who are outvoted are each to pay 6 half marks." We also learn much about the business conducted at these assemblies from the king's charters. In some of them, the king explains the circumstances in which he had been led astray and proceeds to make amends. In others, the king confirms the foundation of monasteries and in one case grants a chapel at Bradford-on-Avon to the nuns of Shaftesbury so that they could use it as a refuge when threatened by Viking attack. The sources of information are in fact so diverse and extensive for these years that we can reach way beyond the tale of Viking raids derived from the Anglo-Saxon Chronicle. Literature in the English language was flourishing, represented by the works of Alfrich, writing at Cerne Abbey in Dorset, and by the collection of vernacular poetry. Literature in Latin was also flourishing, represented, for example, by the writing and copying of saints' lives. It is striking at the same time how this was a period of great activity in the production of manuscripts and in various forms of craftsmanship. Unfortunately, all that seems to have been so positive, even vibrant and constructive, about the middle years of Ethelred's reign came to be eclipsed by the tumultuous events of its closing years. Quite simply, the English were torn apart by tensions and jealousies among themselves and overwhelmed by the impact of 2 devastating invasions in quick succession. In July 1006, a Viking force known to the chronicler as the Great Fleet arrived at Sandwich in Kent, and proceeded from there to ravage England for the rest of the year. At Christmas, the king was in Shropshire, discussing with his councillors how the country could be saved before it was completely destroyed. They decided they had no alternative but to buy them off, whereupon the Vikings returned whence they came. In 1008, the king and his councillors assembled at Enham in Hampshire. Alfeach, Archbishop of Canterbury, and Wulfstan, Archbishop of York, took the lead in formulating the response in the continuing emergency. As well as the usual measures calculated to secure God's support in their struggle, ships were to be built and were to be brought together at Sandwich every year, immediately after Easter, to stay there and to protect this country from every invading army. Alas, it all came to naught. In August 1009, another Viking force, this one known to the chronicler as Thorkell's army, arrived at Sandwich and ravaged England for the next 3 years. The initial response of King Ethelred and his councillors was to order a 3-day programme of public prayer for late September, and to issue a special coin type invoking the Lamb of God and the Holy Spirit as symbols of peace. Then, says the chronicler, the king ordered all the nation to be called out, so that the enemy could be resisted wherever they went. Sadly, it didn't turn out so well. In the words of the chronicler, "And when the Danes were journeying to their ships, the English army should have come out again. Then the English army went home. And when they were in the east, the English army was kept in the west. And when they were in the south, our army was in the north." Then all the councillors were summoned to the king, and it was then to be decided how this country should be defended. But if anything was then decided, it did not last even a month. Finally, there was no leader who would collect an army, but each fled as best he could. And in the end, no shire would even help the next. It was during these years that Archbishop Wulfstan first preached what became his famous sermon to the English people, conveying his own analysis of the terrible situation. "For it is clear and manifest in us all that we have previously transgressed more than we have amended, and therefore much is assailing this people. Things have not gone well now for a long time, at home or abroad, but there has been devastation and famine, burning and bloodshed in every district again and again." It is a long sermon, and like all good sermons, Wulfstan had occasion to reuse it several times. One of the themes which can be traced through the 10th century and into Ethelred's reign is the emergence of London as the principal urban, commercial and political centre of the Kingdom of the English. London owed most, of course, to its location on the River Thames. But ever since its restoration and refortification by King Alfred in the 880s, the city had been coming into its own. The evidence of coinage reveals the steady growth of its commercial importance, and by the second half of the 10th century, it seems to have become a favoured meeting place for royal assemblies. In early September 994, a Viking fleet of over 90 ships, led by Olaf Tryggvason of Norway and Sven Forkbeard of Denmark, came up the Thames to London. As the chronicler says, "And they proceeded to attack the city stoutly, and wished also to set it on fire. But there they suffered more harm and injury than they ever thought any citizens would do to them." In 1009, the Vikings attacked London again. "But, praise be to God," says the chronicler, "it still stands untouched, and they always suffered loss there." By the time Sven Forkbeard and Knut the Mighty brought their armies to England in the final act of this prolonged drama, Ethelred was based in London, and London was the focus of their attention and of the resistance which they encountered. An assemblage of weapons and other implements, found in the 1920s at the north end of London Bridge, and now in the Museum of London, comprises axes, spears, knives, and a grappling iron, judged to date from the late 10th century and to have come from Scandinavia. One could not wish for a more powerful symbol of London's importance at the time of the Danish conquest. King Ethelred died in London on St. George's Day, 23rd of April, 1016. The chronicler said of the king, after his reign of 38 years, "He had held his kingdom with great toil and difficulties as long as his life lasted." It was the verdict of one who knew the outcome, but who had sympathy and understanding for a king who had laboured long and hard against the odds. When, as visitors, we visit the crypt of St. Paul's, we might wish to pay our respects to Admiral Nelson, to the Duke of Wellington, and of course to Sir Christopher Wren. When we move on to the coffee shop, perhaps we should spare a thought for King Ethelred the Unready.